When defending a biblical doctrine or practice, have you ever been accused of not caring for the lost? I've written a column in the latest issues, etc. journal titled Playing the Mission Card. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jeremy Lamont recounts his slow and sometimes painful path out of Mormonism to the Lutheran confession. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
It doesn't get any more American than religious freedom, that topic. It's more American than apple pie and hot dogs.
The whole sexual revolution requires so much propaganda. They require propaganda because what they are advocating is not sustainable naturally.
The writers and the producers of contemporary Christian music are not ashamed of their mysticism. They are mystics. They're proud of it. They're not trying to hide it. If you said, hey, that song is mystical, they'd say, thank you.
And I think the Ascension shows us very clearly that heaven is our final destiny, but that heaven is already here among us because Christ is among us, and he will never leave us or forsake us.
Swedish Lutheran lawyers love issues, etc. while bike commuting to work in Stockholm, Sweden. Thank you, America, for supporting Europe in this very hard time.
We recently interviewed Dr. Tom Egger of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis about the version of the book of Genesis that was recently produced by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Our listeners are still interested. Should we take that book seriously? We also have some questions about elders in the church and the ongoing mischief at Concordia University, Texas, all from our listeners as we go into this broadcast day, Tuesday, June the 27th. Welcome to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. The comment line, 618-223-8382. We'll get to those questions and comments in a moment. A little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel joins us to teach a Sunday school lesson on the Passover in Exodus chapter 12. And Pastor Sean Denzer will help us look forward to Sunday morning according to the three-year lectionary, the fifth Sunday after Pentecost. It's time for listener email, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382.
Right before entering studio, the nameless Studio B, we shall call it, I went to the kitchen. Someone's brewing coffee. Is that you, Half Calf Craig?
That is correct. It is me. I'm feeling a little down, a little low. I need a little pick-me-up this afternoon. So
is your pick-me-up half calf or is it full calf?
Yeah, the whole calf.
It's a special blend.
That's right, yeah.
Just answer the question. Is it half calf or full calf?
No.
Yes or no?
Well,
you're on the stand.
We're going to get there.
No, is it half calf or full calf? Then you can explain.
The full calf just doesn't
work. See, this is Craig. If you work with Craig, it's obfuscation, deflection. It's a simple question, half calf or full calf, and then make your explanation. Which one is it?
Well.
See, this was like working with the guy. Not a lot of deep thinking going on here.
It's half calf, but like
okay,
I said,
here's the answer. It took a minute. We got it. Okay, half calf. Now go make your case.
Well, I'm just saying, sometimes my tummy just can't handle the whole...
Your tummy.
Yeah, it can't. The whole load of caffeine, so I have to go half calf.
We need to enlighten our listeners that aren't aware of the brouhaha, pardon the pun, the scheme of one Lord Feichtinger, who for years was making half-calf coffee, taking some caffeinated Folgers and some decaffeinated Folgers, combining them into half-calf. For years, Wilkin and I could not understand why our coffee did not taste right. We brought in water. We got different filters. We got a new machine. Silence from one Lord Feichtinger about why our coffee didn't taste right. And then one day, I don't remember, Wilkin, do you remember how we caught Lord Feichtinger in this trickery, chicanery?
I don't remember. I just remember we located a green can of coffee
The man said nothing. We would do these Issues Etc. 24 broadcasts. I was like, why is this coffee not kicking in? Why is this coffee not kicking in?
Let me just say, for the record, this is not how I remember this at all.
So do you remember how we caught you, Craig? Was it Issues Etc. 24? When did we finally get you to come clean?
It went on for 2 years.
At least.
He just would just silently mix coffee together and then pass it off as fully caffeinated. We even had the red can, or I guess you call it a can.
Yeah, I think he mixed them into the red can.
And he did that just sat out there. So,
Craig, you'd like to explain yourself? You have anything to say, or do you plead the fifth?
I think the can that was in the freezer. Well, did we have a freezer? No, we didn't have a freezer at the old place.
No,
we didn't. But yeah, the can that was there. I mean, yeah, that's what I did. I mixed and I put. It said clearly on the can, half calf.
We used to see a red Folgers. Now red Folgers isn't the green the decaf, and red is caffeinated. All I remember ever seeing was a big red Folgers.
No, that's right. It was green. The green is decaf. The red is caffeinated, and I think I took an old empty can, and then that's
red.
What I would mix. Yeah, it was a red one.
Red one. It was
a
red one.
Well, I'm sorry. Should I have used a green one? I mean,
well, if we saw the green, we would have figured out much before your silence why our coffee stunk and why we weren't getting a jolt like you're trying to right now, but your tummy can't take.
I remember you guys even told me. You guys said, coffee just doesn't taste right out of that machine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And he said nothing. He said nothing.
It was awful.
You know, I guess in hindsight, we probably just made our own coffee. We could have gotten to the bottom of it. But we would have had to bring in our own coffee because I did make it sometimes, and I made it out of the red thing, assuming it's caffeinated Folgers red, right? Not so.
That's probably a good assumption, yeah. That's probably a good assumption.
Yep. All right. Well, so this is for all those people that weren't in on the, because I think we said something about half calf at the conference, or somebody approached me about the conference, about the half gap. They still love that story. So now you know the story. Anyway, let's begin with Lori. Hello there, and thanks for all your insightful topics and excellent guests. While listening today to the segment about the Genesis rewrite by PETA, I was repeatedly struck by the notion that too much credence was given to the book. I wanted to interject, tell us that it is a deconstruction, a manipulative ploy, or a big fat lie, etc. My observation is there is too much respect paid to these things that we should be loudly, unabashedly, and forcefully opposing in the public square. We live in a time where we are expected first and foremost to be nice instead of truthful, and it has to stop somewhere. The pastor's comparative analysis is great if the intention is to describe the book, but I just didn't hear that it is an intentional destruction of a sacred writing. Maybe I missed that part, but I needed to hear it throughout the segment in order to be reminded that it is not a paraphrase or summary version of Genesis, but a piece of PETA propaganda that defiled the story of creation to get a few laughs and applause at the expense of the truth. We are being systematically forced into accepting alternate realities as though they are valid and real. We have to declare otherwise. If Christians don't do that, who will? Thanks for the feedback. Thanks for listening, Lori.
I don't think either Dr. Egger or I took the PETA book seriously. It's a really kind of ham-fisted, rather lame attempt to hijack the book of Genesis. And I think that came across in the course of our conversation. But what we were trying to do is to, number one, make people aware of what's in the book and what its goals are. And two, we could have a conversation where we just kind of ranted about it. That wouldn't really accomplish that second goal, which is if there's somebody who's very sympathetic to the aims of PETA and they listen to this conversation, we want them to hear that we have done our homework and that we've dealt with the particulars of the, and we tried to deal with as many particulars. Genesis is a big book. We tried to deal with as many of the particulars as we could, showing how it distorts the narrative. It also robs the reader of the real point of the book of Genesis, which is to point forward to Christ. And there was no attempt to be nice at the expense of the truth. I think everything we said about the book was entirely truthful, but we can react to these things two different ways, and they each have their own place and time. There is a time to ridicule, but then there's also a time to say, all right, this is what they've handed us. We're going to look at it and take it as seriously as we can, given the fact that it's an AI version of the book of Genesis. We'll take it as seriously as we can, point out where it deviates from the biblical narrative, and make it clear to the listeners, as I think Dr. Egger did several times, that this is not just a mishandling of any book. This is a mishandling of God's word, something that we should take very seriously. There's a time for ridicule, but I don't think that conversation was the time for it.
I think what we're attempting to do is what we're exhorted to in Ephesians 4:15, speaking the truth in love. So right. If your daughter comes home, somebody from college gives her this PETA book, so this has some interesting things in there. Is your first reaction, that's just a bunch of liberal, progressive, wacko nonsense? How far do you think that's going to get?
It's going to get nowhere, and nobody learns anything, and there's no chance of convincing, and people would probably just dig in on either side. Now, I'll say this much. There is a mindset, sadly, among Christians nowadays that that's exactly what we want to have happen. Let's just all dig in. The other side dug in, let's dig in too. And that's trench warfare. That's what we're going to have. We're just going to shoot at each other from our protected positions, and we will never advance one inch. It worked really well in World War I and got a lot of people killed.
Right. Defined really, really well.
Or are we going to have the courage of our convictions as Christians? The truth is on our side. And are we going to advance rather than just dig a trench and shoot at the enemy? Are we going to advance? We know the victory is won. We are the church militant. And we can either do trench warfare and all you do is kill people. You never even take any prisoners. Or we can advance and take the ground that is in front of us, which is what we're trying to do.
I remember a fellow colleague we used to have. His dad was World War II generation. He was a baby boomer. And he just came home from college once, decrying, criticizing our war in Vietnam, United States war in Vietnam. His dad's response, oh, those are just a bunch of pinko commies who hate America. That was his argument. That didn't go real well with his son. So that's all we're trying to
do. It's the easier thing to do.
Oh, it is.
It's to just react.
This is a conservative talk radio.
Just react and dismiss it out of hand. It's the easier thing to do. But you don't win anybody over with the truth. It's not our niceness or winsomeness that's going to win anybody over. It's the truth that's going to win them over. So that's why the apostle says, speaking the truth in love.
Joe writes, please host Delano Squires with an in-person mic or send him one and make him a normal guest like Terry Mattingly. His opinions are useful, helpful, and challenging.
I wouldn't call Terry a normal guest, but I think what they're talking about is, can we send the same mic that we sent to Terry and the same equipment that we sent to Terry so that we can have better audio quality? And I don't know how that's worked, Jeff. That really has, we've done that for people who are regular guests or who are, I'll just use my term, like who are A-list guests in terms of our listeners really like listening to them.
There are people that come on bi-weekly, some cases like Mattingly, and we try to get Roseborough on weekly. And so,
and in post-COVID America, almost everybody now has a USB mic. Almost
not
everyone.
Delano Squires,
but not
a lot
Squires.
Of our people. Not a lot of our people. And here's the problem. Craig will tell you this because he's our production director. We are clearly have way higher audio standards than just about anybody else. Delano Squires is like on Fox. We have people, and I will mention another guest. We had big high profile guest just in the last couple weeks. Started getting a little testy because we're trying to get that USB mic to the right pattern settings and mic placement, and let's just say you don't get to hear all that.
No, you don't get to hear the sometimes several minutes to stretching on into quarter of an hour, half hour that is spent trying to make sure that the guests sound as good as they can. And what I've noticed is we used to set our standard as National Public Radio quality sound in terms of just how good it sounds. So we did all our research and we set our audio in its settings to the Audible standard, which is kind of the industry standard. I listen to a lot of National Public Radio. I've noticed that they just kind of don't care anymore.
TV's same way.
They have bad guest audio.
Guy's got like a camera from his Mac or something. It's like on Fox or CNN. It's like, wow.
The days of saying, hey, let's send like during COVID, they just sent a truck out to Molly Hemingway's house and parked in front of it. And it's a satellite truck. And she goes in there and she sits in that little mini set and she does her segment from there. I think given a couple more months of it, it probably would have just been, you could just Skype us. It's good enough. Do your own hair and makeup. You just Skype us. So the standards have gone down. We are determined to make listening to this program as easy as possible for our listeners. So the best quality we can possibly get. We will take your advice on Delano Squires under advisement. We'll be right back.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we move further in our adventure in Acts with Moses Part 2, Moses Part 3, Tabernacle versus Temple, Stephen's Martyrdom and Prayer, and Philip Preaches in Samaria. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
Does this sound like your church budget process at the end of the year? You get last year's budget and go through with a committee line by line, maybe what we should spend next year. Maybe you have a prayer. But where's the Word of God in this process? When do the people hear what the small catechism says about giving and why we do it? Contact us at LCMS Stewardship so that we can help you fix this process, put the Word of God first, and put your congregation on a good footing. LCMS.org/stewardship.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You and your youth group are invited to the 2023 Higher Things Youth Conference, Beyond Reasonable Doubt, at Trinity University in San Antonio, Texas, from July 25th through the 28th. Come hear pastors Brian Wolfmuller and Chris Roseborough teach the youth of our church about doubt and apologetics, and give them the assurance that their faith is beyond reasonable doubt. Remaining space is limited. Register now and find more information at higherthings.org.
Register today. The 2023 Lutherans for Life National Conference is October 11th through the 13th at the Holiday Inn Cincinnati Airport in Erlanger, Kentucky. The conference includes visits to the Ark Encounter and Creation Museum. Online registration is open now with early bird pricing at lutheransforlife.org/conference. Lutherans for Life, equipping Lutherans and their neighbors to be gospel-motivated voices for life. Lutheransforlife.org.
Hello, it's me. I've thought about us for a long, long time.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday, June 27th. We're going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Here are some questions from the Issues Etc. comment line about our recent interview with attorney Tom Halverson on an attempt by Concordia University, Texas to reject the governance and oversight of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Hi, Issues Etc. This is Dave from Columbia, Missouri. Campus pastors really love Issues Etc. In the recent interview about the discussion with the Concordia University, Texas, this doctoral dissertation was referred to numerous times. It would be very interesting to know, A, when the doctoral dissertation was written, and B, what kind of doctorate this doctor received. I hope we hear more from you. Thanks a lot.
He's making reference to the conversation we had with Tom Halverson, and it was a very complex and rather long timeline, but integral to the mischief that's taking place down in Texas, at Concordia University, Texas, in Austin, is a doctoral dissertation written by Dr. Christy Kirk. The dissertation itself is called The Changing Nature of Church-College Relations, A History and Case Study of Concordia University, Texas. That's their doctoral dissertation. It was earned at Capella University in 2013, so 10 years ago. Now, Tom said in the course of the interview, I just flat out asked him whether this was, in essence, a blueprint for what Concordia University, Texas has actually done, and he said that's exactly what it is. You can read the dissertation, and it's a step-by-step kind of a instruction booklet on how to separate a university from a church body, how to essentially for the regents to take it over, which is exactly what they're attempting to do. So all of this has kind of been hidden in plain sight for the last 10 years. I don't know that anybody had the wherewithal to say, oh, I'm just going to read this obscure doctoral dissertation and see. But in hindsight, we now see that this has been planned very carefully. It's hard to say that this has not been planned when you have a 10-year-old doctoral dissertation that is your game plan for the heist, for stealing a university from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, which is what they're attempting to do. And I say that because that's what Tom said in the interview. This is theft. As an attorney, he's looking at this situation. He says this is an attempt at theft. So there's the answer to your question.
We can't call our incident with Lord Feichninger a heist, can we?
No, it was a long con is what I'd call it. A long con.
On the subject of Concordia, Texas, this email, this listener says, well, I listen to Issues, et cetera, often. This is my first reply. Great conversation with Mr. Halverson. The disaster unfurling at Concordia, Texas is so sad. I sincerely hope the Synod acts and quickly. Our son graduated from CU Austin. I taught part-time there for a couple of years. The disintegration has been going on for a few years. I'm so disappointed in President Dr. Christian and Christy Kirk. Just terrible leadership or lack thereof on their part. God's blessings to you and the staff at Issues.
I think the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, which is slated in about 5 weeks, is that right? About 5 weeks?
We'll be there.
To meet. I got the city wrong last time we discussed it. It is not in Minnesota. It's in Wisconsin.
Milwaukee.
Right, Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, Minnesota. They both start with M's.
Yeah. I think I had said in, what town did I name? I can't remember, but it's in Milwaukee. And I'm glad because I don't want to drive all the way to Minnesota. That's a long distance. Milwaukee is manageable. But they're going to meet here in about 5 weeks. This is on the agenda in a very, very big way. And Dr. Christensen will have to answer some questions, and the leadership there will have to answer some questions, and the Texas district president, I'm sure he will answer the same question over and over again with every single person that he runs into there. And I don't know how they'll deal with it. I know that when we talked with Tom Halverson, he said the feedback he'd been getting from his essay on this, he said the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod leadership should feel free to act as boldly as they need to. They don't need to be timid. They don't need to set up a task force to study this question, which will inevitably be suggested by someone. They should reject that idea and simply go full steam ahead and challenge this. And if necessary, receive authorization from the Synod and Convention. They don't need it. They can go into court. The Synodical Board of Directors can go into court anytime they want to. But they should receive a resounding vote of confidence from the convention delegates to pursue all and any legal options that they need to keep this theft from occurring.
Ron writes, I have been approached about being an elder. What does the Bible say in regards to the qualifications of an elder? Is there Bible quotes that I can refer to? Thanks for listening. Thanks for the email, Ron.
Well, we can build some qualifications for elder from the parts that are there that are attached to two offices in the church, the pastor and the deacon. I think the consensus is that we're talking about the same office under a different name. So does an elder have to meet all the qualifications that a pastor does? No. But there are certain common sense things, and we can now infer from those other qualifications that are apostolic, that are not merely common sense, but are, as St. Paul says, the will of the Lord himself. So we look to those qualifications for a pastor, and we say, since the office of elder is a human arrangement rather than a divine arrangement, the pastoral office is a divine arrangement. The elder's office is a human arrangement. It's a good one. It's not necessary, but it serves a good purpose. What do we want to say an elder ought to be? And up until very recently, this is something the convention also ought to take up. Up until very recently, that office was reserved in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for men. You just start with that. It's an office that can be held by men, and they need to meet certain qualifications. Each congregation then is going to say they're either going to contract or expand those qualifications as they see fit. They might say something like, he needs to be a family man. They're, because it's a human arrangement, they can make that a qualification. They don't need to cite chapter and verse for that. They need to say he should be married with children, or maybe he should be of a certain age. He should be no younger than 30 years old. He'd grown up enough to get all the sillies out of him so that he's qualified to be sober-minded. And those other qualifications, but you can kind of match them or infer them from the apostolic qualifications that we have for the divinely arranged pastoral office. It doesn't have to be the same, but each congregation is going to figure that out. I really do hope, I don't know if it's in the workbook, I really do hope that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod takes up the issue where we misstepped, it's got to be 15 years ago, and said, any office that a layman can hold, a laywoman can hold, up to and including the elders of the church. And it was just kind of a sneaky way of trying to edge closer toward the line of saying, well, you know, if they can be elders, why can't they be pastors? It was a very obvious attempt to do that. And in a fit of, what shall we say, foolishness, the Missouri Synod decided to make that decision, and it should be reversed.
So the official in convention, the Missouri Synod said, we're kosher with women elders?
Yes. Any office that a layman can hold, a laywoman can hold as well.
Really?
So president of congregation, elders, all that stuff. Yes.
Huh.
And it should be reversed.
All right. Let's see. Darren says, great making the case conference. The sound was, this all caps, two words in all caps. The sound was much better this year. I think you fixed the sound issues. Great job, concludes Darren.
You need to know that at our making the case conference, we're in a room that was originally built, it's their chapel, holds about 600 people. It was originally built with carpet on the floor. And then they did a remodel, and then they put down that, I can't remember what it's called. It's just white stone that they put down. Very beautiful place. So what happened then is it went from being kind of an ordinary acoustic space, big, tall brick walls, kind of squared off, to being a very difficult acoustic space. It's got a hard floor, hard walls. They installed some, they kind of fit with the architecture. They installed some sound remediation in there. It just looks like curved pieces of wood on the wall to kind of keep the echoes down. But it's still a really tough room. So we get no credit for that whatsoever. Because we show up and we already have had that advanced team that are employed by Concordia University Chicago working on that for us. And it's a work in progress. It was much better this year because they went to a lot of trouble to install speakers at strategic places and to think a little bit more how we're going to mic the room. And so we tested all of that on Thursday before the conference began to make sure that there weren't any dead spots. There were a couple, but that they weren't all over the place like they used to be, and there weren't places where all the words pile up on top of each other and you can't actually make out what the speaker's saying. You have to do lip reading. I sit off to the side, and in previous years, I would have to lip read the main speaker because all the words were echoing at different times into my ears, and it was just piling up into a kind of cacophony, and they solved that problem. We get no credit whatsoever. We just want to make sure that next time we go up there, next year, they do it for us all again. When we come back, we're going to be teaching a Sunday school lesson on the Passover in Exodus chapter 12 with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel.
And close with love the way that you do. I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Have you heard the rumblings about the 68th Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? Well, it's coming up this summer in Milwaukee. In convention, LCMS delegates comprised of both laity and clergy gather for worship, study of God's Word, and to discuss and vote on the business of Synod. For a preview of what's coming up, pick up a copy of the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness, cph.org to subscribe to the magazine, or witness.lcms.org to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.